after the fall of Fort Ticonderoga, things were quite bad. The Continental Congress had to do something. Everybody was very afraid that the British would ultimately fail fairly quickly. John Adams, as the head of the committee of was in charge of the war, said, well, we should replace Schuyler with Horatio Gates. Now, that was quite a reversal of fortune, you might say, for Mr. Gates, who'd been a mid-level passed-over British officer, was now in charge of the entire American army in the north. This is Jim Kaplan, and I'm going to be talking about General Horatio Gates and his political legacy. He's somewhat well-known for his victory at Saratoga, the Battle of Saratoga, which was the most important battle of the American Revolution, most people think. But many people are unaware that he was also a critical figure in the election of Thomas Jefferson in 1800 because of his role in New York City politics. So I'm going to be talking primarily about that, although I'm going to first be talking about General Gates, who is sometimes a controversial figure, but one, in my view, who is significantly underestimated in American history in terms of his importance.
This is the Historian's Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore. Our guest is New York City correspondent Jim Kaplan. Jim Kaplan is a founding partner of the Midtown New York law firm of Greenberg and Kaplan, and a walking tour historian of New York City neighborhoods, and a co-founder and past president of the Lower Manhattan Historical Association. He's a former vice president, long-term board member of the Temple of Universal Judaism. And his topic today is General Horatio Gates from the American Revolution and more. What is his background, Jim? Who was Horatio Gates?
Well, Horatio Gates, you might say ironically, was born in Malden, England. And as far as I can tell, he never came to the United States until he was about 42. He was basically a passed-over British officer. He was his parents were the chief domestic servants to the Duke of Leeds, who was somewhat politically powerful, and they apparently were able to get young Horatio into the officer corps in the British Army, which was really a step up. You might view it as like somebody who's from a lower middle class background going into an Ivy League school like Yale or Harvard. Mm-hmm. That would begin his career as a senior level person, you might say, in the British Army.
Why did he switch sides, or why did he become one of the rebels?
Well, I think what happened was he was an ambitious young fellow. He wasn't a great battlefield commander, but he was a very good supply officer, and he was well-liked by certain people in the British Army, or in the British aristocracy, you might say. Essentially won a major battle in Martinique, and was hoping for advancement to the higher levels of the British Army. But to advance at the time, this was right after the 30 Years' War, you really needed two things. You needed money, which his family didn't have significantly, or you needed a noble position, or you had to be of the upper class. And in a sense, Gates was neither, so he became disaffected with the whole British system, which he thought held people of merit back. And therefore, at the age of 42, as he was not advancing, he had come back to England and after having a number of postings throughout the world with the British Army. He just didn't get the promotion that he was hoping for, and he decided he'd try his luck in America. The retirement benefits at the time, you might say, were pretty good going back to the Roman. So he bought a farm in West Virginia and began to living the life of a retired farmer, somebody who believed that he could have been a great general if only he'd been given the chance. And then the American Revolution broke out, and he was very much in sympathy with the democratic aspirations of the American Revolution. He was a follower of Wilkes and Liberty in London, and so he decided that he would. He was a neighbor of George Washington's brother Sam, and he apparently introduced him to Washington and signed up at the beginning of the Revolution for the American Army. Now, Washington was absolutely delighted to have an experienced British Army officer, particularly a supply officer, and he immediately made him the Adjutant General of the United States Army when he went up to Boston to take over the Continental Army. He had a close relationship with George Washington and was an excellent, excellent supply officer, an excellent adjutant general for the army that was kind of disorganized up in Boston after the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Now, didn't also Patriot John Adams get involved, or he backed Gates early on?
Yes. What happened was Gates quickly, perhaps because of his political acumen, you might say, having been through the British army system, became friendly with certain key Massachusetts politicians, including John and Samuel Adams. And they noticed how efficient he was in trying to reorganize the Continental Army, which was mostly a Massachusetts operation up in Boston. And and he became kind of an informal military advisor to them, which they had no significant military experience, even though Adams was the head of the Department of War in Congress, the Army Committee that was running the war in Congress. So they advanced him far beyond where he was in England, the American Army in the North at the time was run by Philip Schuyler, who was a well-known New York old-line Dutch militiaman who sided with the Americans. And there was a period during which they began to say, well, maybe we should put Gates in rather than Schuyler, because Schuyler had abandoned Fort Ticonderoga, and Schuyler was not very popular with the New England militiamen. Schuyler was considered more of an aristocrat, whereas the militiamen were more democratic. So after the fall of Fort Ticonderoga, things were quite bad, and the Continental Congress had to do something, and everybody was very afraid that the British would ultimately prevail fairly quickly. John Adams, as the head of the committee that is in charge of the war, said, well, we should replace Schuyler with Horatio Gates. Now, that was quite a reversal of fortune, you might say, for Mr. Gates, who'd been a mid-level passed-over British officer, was now in charge of the entire American army in the North. And Schuyler, whose partisans were many, particularly in New York State, were not happy about this. Who is this guy? Where did he come from? And the British were even more amazed. What are the Americans smoking? They're going to put a third-level officer who's never fought a battle in charge of their entire army at a critical point? The whole thing was but they weren't laughing 2 or 3 months later.
No. Well, we come to October of 1777, the Battle of Saratoga, and this becomes a great victory for Gates.
Well, at the time, the British were coming down from Canada, and they wanted to hook up with their forces in New York City and control the Hudson and River, and they had to get to Albany. And they had 10,000 very well-trained troops, and it seemed like once Fort Ticonderoga, which was considered the impregnable fort that would stop them, fell in a day or two, it seemed like it would be a piece of cake. So it was at that point, on August 18th, 1777, that Gates took over from Schuyler. And it certainly didn't look good for the Americans. But the fact was that 2 months later, the entire British Army surrendered.
The question always comes, who won the Battle of Saratoga? I mean, Gates was the commander, but he had help on the field from American general, I think he was a general, Benedict Arnold, who was maybe acting outside of orders, but launched an attack. So who won Saratoga? Was it really Gates, or was it actually Arnold and other officers?
There is a myth today, which I think is fomented by later Washington biographers, that Benedict Arnold really won the Battle of Saratoga. I don't buy that at all. What happened was Arnold was a very good battlefield commander, but he was not in line in the view of the American Army to become the commander. The Gates had become was placed in charge, and Arnold did perform a very good function at the Battle of Freeman's Farm, where he almost defeated the British, but the British pulled in reinforcements. And the question was, Arnold said to Gates, put in the whole army, we can beat him right here. But Gates said, this is crazy. You're not going to be able to beat well-trained British army with militiamen. You should withdraw. Gates basically fought a very defensive battle. His idea was that he would place very good breastworks under Thaddeus Kosciuszko, a Polish nobleman who had been assigned to him. And they would stand at a high ground in Bemis Heights and wait for the British to attack. Arnold thought that they should, that once it seemed like they were getting the upper hand, and the reason they were getting the upper hand was that Gates had successfully called on the Massachusetts militias or the New England militias to join up in force because of his connections with the Massachusetts politicians, as well as because of his exploitation of an incident in which a woman named Jane McCrae, who actually was a Tory woman, had been scalped by Indians under Burgoyne's command. So that inflamed the colonists, and Gates actually, at the Battle of Saratoga, had a force of about 15,000 people, which was larger than the British force, although they weren't as well trained. So stationing them on the high ground at Bemis Heights in a defensive position pushed Gates in a much better position to win the major battle. What happened was the British, he said, Arnold said, we should go out and attack the British and push them back. Our men need to keep fighting. And Gates said, no, Mr. Arnold, we're going to stay right here. They're going to attack us. General Burgoyne, who's the key general, who was one of the king's favorite generals, I know him. I was in his same regiment in England. He's going to attack. He's not going to retreat before people like us. Mm-hmm. And when he attacks, we'll overcome him. And that's exactly what happened. Gates, the British made an improvident attack against the higher ground at Bemis Heights against a larger force, and they were unable to break through the American lines. Now, Benedict Arnold was actually relieved of his command because of this difference in opinion as to how to proceed with the battle, and he was sitting around waiting, and he saw what was happening, and he, without authorization from Gates, came onto the field and led a group against the British, which pushed them back further. But to say that Arnold was responsible for the victory, I think, is ridiculous. I think that the planning and the whole strategy was designed by Horatio Gates.
After the Battle of Saratoga is won, Burgoyne surrenders to Gates. There's a rift that develops between Alexander Hamilton and Horatio Gates, which will end up lasting into the new republic in New York City.
Yes, what happened was Alexander Hamilton was a 21-year-old aide to George Washington, very able, very, this was one of his first important assignments. Washington didn't want to come up to Saratoga to ask Gates to turn over his army to them, although he needed it. They needed the 15,000 troops who had gathered and just won the major battle in the American Revolution. He sent 21-year-old Alexander Hamilton. And Hamilton, that did not sit well with Gates, who was probably in his 40s or 50s, had just won the major battle in the American Revolution, to have some young kid telling him, well, you've got to turn over all your, at least three or four of your regiments to General Washington, who's struggling down in Pennsylvania. You know, Hamilton was a cocky, arrogant young guy, but Gates did ultimately turn over the troops because Washington was his commander. But there came friction personally between Gates and Hamilton, Hamilton obviously being a much younger man. And that would later play out 25 years later in the politics of New York City.
Was Gates involved in this cabal that was to replace Washington as commander-in-chief, making Gates commander-in-chief?
That's not clear. Gates was appointed. There were many people, particularly in the New England, who felt that Washington had just lost the Battle of New York, and he'd lost the Battle of Brandywine, and here was a commander who, against great odds, had assembled a force of militiamen that had won a major battle in New York, at Saratoga. So there were some people who said we should get rid of Washington and replace him with a man who knows how to win battles, Horatio Gates. Quite a reversal of fortune for a mid-level, lower-middle-class army officer. And Gates was actually appointed something called the Board of War, but Washington having much greater political support, Gates had only been in the United States for less than 5 years. He was able to essentially outmaneuver him, and Gates, you might say, lost out in the question of who was going to be in control.
And then later in the Revolution, Gates was leading troops who were badly defeated in South Carolina.
Yes, Bates was placed in charge at the battle by the Continental Congress in the Southern divisions. And at the Battle of Camden, he was badly defeated. You might say he had a bad day that day. But that furthered the view of many Washington partisans that he was really not a great general, that it really wasn't Gates, it was really Arnold who had won, it was a disastrous defeat. And in fact, Gates ran from the battlefield, he said, to try to get reinforcements. Alexander Hamilton quipped that it was amazing that a man of his age, he was probably about 50, could move so quickly in the rear. He went from like 40 or 50 miles to away from the battle. So he was accused of cowardice also. So his reputation was greatly diminished, to put it mildly.
What did Gates do after the war?
Well, after the war, he returned to his farm in what today is West Virginia, a place called Traveler's Rest. He had a number of personal setbacks. His first wife, Dorothy, died. His son, Robert, died. So here he was alone on the Virginia frontier. This was at a time when George Washington had become, or was becoming, president of the United States under the U.S. Constitution, and John Adams was vice president. And here was Gates, the forgotten man, left on the West Virginia frontier. But he had an uncanny ability to pick himself. It said that he was drinking and, you know, that he was finished. And most historians, when they talk about Gates, end with his depression on the West Virginia frontier. But he had an uncanny ability, as he had 20 years earlier, to pick himself up And what he did was he tried to marry a wealthy woman. He went after Janet Montgomery, who was one of the wealthiest women in New York. That didn't quite work out, although they had a serious interlude, you might say. And then he married a wealthy widow in named Mary Valance in Virginia. So Mrs. Valance apparently decided that she had friends in New York and that he was kind of persona non grata in Virginia because of the defeats at Camden and other things. They decided to move up to New York. So in 1790, he moved to New York City. They bought a place around 23rd Street called Rose Hill Farm, and they, with her money, presumably, they set up. They began to be much more active in the political and social life of New York City. Mm-hmm. He was well received because many of the people in New York City had probably fought with him or fought under him at Saratoga. So he became active in the Society of Cincinnati and things like that. And then he became active in the politics of New York City.
He ran for, or he was elected, what, to the New York State Assembly?
New York State Assembly, yes. But that was an absolutely critical election. What happened was, at the time, there was considerable, you might say, conflict between the Federalists, headed by Alexander Hamilton and John Jay and Schuyler, who had been supporters of the U.S. Constitution. And one of the clauses of the U.S. Constitution had said that no state shall impair the obligation of contract. What that meant was that people who had imported land under the New York State forfeiture laws right after the Revolution, the High Sheriff Marinus Willett had been in charge of this, the land in New York City, which had previously belonged to Tories, which was most of the land, was thus distributed to Revolutionary War veterans. But that ran directly contrary to the U.S. Constitution, which basically implemented a provision of the Treaty of Paris, which said that previous Tories' land would not be disturbed. So Hamilton and his associates, Hamilton as a lawyer, began to try to recover the land which had been awarded to Revolutionary War veterans for the previous Tories. That obviously didn't go over well with many of the people who had been awarded the land and who had fought on the winning side of the Revolution, and they became active with an organization called the Tammany Society, which would hold meetings and try to hold July 4th celebrations. And at first it was kind of a civic organization based on the principles of Chief Tammany of the Delawares, but it also became a political organization. So by 1800, things came to a head in the sense that John Adams was running for re-election. He'd been elected in 1796. And Thomas Jefferson was running against him. Jefferson was supported by what was called the Democratic Republican Party, or which is today the Modern Democratic Party, which still controls the city. The question was, who was going to prevail? And the key issue was, where would the New York State's electoral votes go? The South tended to support Jefferson. The North and New England states tended to support Adams. So New York State was the critical swing area, and the swing part of New York State was likely to be New York City. New York City had traditionally been staunchly Federalist under Hamilton, but Aaron Burr and a number of people with whom Gates became associated were interested in seeing if they could overturn the Federalists in the New York City elections for state assembly. That would be critical to the whole election of the country. Hamilton put up people who were, you know, normal assembly candidates, not the most prominent young people. But Burr's idea was they would have celebrity candidates, and one of the most important celebrity candidates would be Horatio Gates, also Governor George Clinton. It would have them run for the relatively lowly position of New York State Assembly. For Gates, that was a very difficult decision because, firstly, he had been friendly, maintained a friendship with John Adams, and Adams had placed him in command. And secondly, he was uncertain whether the Tammany Society and Burr would be able to pull this off. And thirdly, he was 72 years old. He was an old man, at least in those days. But it said that perhaps his wife convinced him that even though he was 72 years old, he was not too old to strike another blow for liberty. And he decided to run for the state assembly, and he won. And that essentially broke the back of the Federalist Party and broke the political power of his old enemy, Alexander Hamilton, in New York City and New York State. And, later there was obviously the Burr-Hamilton duel, but that was a critical election, and I believe General Gates had a critical role in it. Mm-hmm. I would argue that his role in the election of Thomas Jefferson may have been even important as his role as the general in charge of Saratoga.
Our guest has been New York City correspondent Jim Kaplan, an attorney. Jim Kaplan is a founding partner of the New York law firm of Greenberg and Kaplan. He's also a walking tour historian of New York neighborhoods and co-founder and past president of the Lower Manhattan Historical Association. This information first appeared as an article in New York Almanac.
Weekly feature of the Historians Podcast. It's called The History Mystery. I'm Dave Green. And we get right to the point here today. We have a question, and Bob will give you the answer and some information in between. History Mystery question for this week. What battle is considered the turning point of the American Revolution? Give you some choices here. The Battle of Bull Run, the Battle of Waterloo somewhere, maybe Iowa, I'm not sure, we'll find out. The Battle of the Bulge, or the Battle of Saratoga? The answer in a moment.
Thank you, Dave. The Historians Podcast Fun Drive has a long way to go. This is sounding like a broken record. We've a long way to go to reach our $7,000 goal by year's end, just now a couple of months away. Please donate online today and go to our website to do that, bobcudmore.com. Press the blue button, which takes you to our GoFundMe page where you can donate by credit card. Or send a check made out to Bob Cudmore to 125 Horseman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. No donation is too small or too big, and you can give anonymously. Please donate and do it today. And now the answer to today's history mystery. What battle is considered the turning point of the American Revolution? The Battle of Bull Run, the Battle of Waterloo, the Battle of the Bulge, or the Battle of Saratoga? Well, the answer is the Battle of Saratoga. Historians Podcast is produced by Dave Green, and I'm Bob Cudmore.